Hello, everyone, and welcome to Books Undone. I'm your host, Livia J. Elliott, and today I'm pleased to bring you another author spotlight. Let me introduce you to C.B. Lansdale, author of the titlings of Thrust Save and Far Removed. Koi, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Livia.
Will you like to introduce yourselves to the listeners?
As Livia said, I am the author of Far Removed, which was my debut novel, released on the 5th of September last year, and we're actually recording on the 5th again, so this is its first birthday. I also released a prequel novelette, about 17,000 words, and that's what we'll be discussing today. It gives the story of one of the main characters in Far Removed, Oklis.
Can't wait to dive in, but before we move forward, let me tackle the usual disclaimers. First, our discussion today will be focused on the prequel novelette only. As a result, the discussion around the titlings of Thrust Save will contain spoilers. However, we will not spoil the first book on the duology, Far Removed, so you can listen safely if you want to dive into her books. Second, what you will hear is our subjective thoughts on this novelette. You are allowed to disagree, especially if you read it. That said, one of the things that struck me from titlings, it's the world building and how complex Nyadria, the moon where this is set, is. You created so many societies, the clans, which have very biased perceptions about each other. And so one of the main themes that I detected while I was reading was the bias towards immigrants, and also the prejudices about the other clans. What inspired you to touch these themes?
Far Removed, actually, I'll give this information about it. I won't spoil it, but the setting, it's a very socially segregated society. They have quite a strong class system. They've got the first clans to emerge, and they are very powerful, and they tend to subject those newer clans that have emerged in more recent centuries. I thought it would be a good opportunity in the novelette just to look at Oklis's home clan. Oklis is from the Praemor stratum. He's from quite a privileged background, and was good just to see their perception of clans that are very far from them, because the Drass Channel, in which the novel takes place, it's very far from the other clans, and they're quite isolated. They tend to feel that they're quite proud about their own culture, and there are other wealthy clans who have over the centuries colonized some of the lesser clans, and they've taken resources from them. This is a period where there's just this tension between people, and people feel threatened by those who are from different cultures and see things in different ways. There was a lot to unpack, actually, but I found, looking at Oklis's story, it would be good to introduce some of the elders in his clan, since he's only a titling or a child at this point. I'd say he's the equivalent of like a 16-year-old human. I couldn't write this novella from his perspective, because he has quite a limited view or understanding. So that is why I introduced Emmis, who is well-traveled, and then gave me the opportunity to contrast Emmis's view, where he's quite accepting of many different people. He's come to understand the different clans operate in different ways and that they all have something to offer. So when he encounters some of the more rigid views in Drass Save from the elders there, like Valenska, he's given quite a bit of time in one of the chapters speaking to Emmis, and Emmis, he's overwhelmed in some ways by Valenska's views, because you can see this is someone who hasn't traveled well. He has many assumptions that are unfounded about naiads from other clans.
Yeah, and that's something that came across very strongly in the novella. I love that scene that you mentioned. Emmis felt frustrated, like his frustration will pop up from the page. But in general, when I was reading the characters, their perception of immigrants and of the other clans also changed depending on how much they had traveled. Those that were often the older people that wouldn't have traveled, they had so much fear, an unfounded fear. And sometimes they will make comments that perhaps, for my experience in the real world, I was just shaking my head, you know, like saying, like, it's not like that. Contrast that to Oklis's perception. He's young. He hasn't traveled, but he was young. So he had this whole curiosity about the world beyond. Something that struck me in there is, when do we lose that curiosity between when we are young and when we are old, if we haven't traveled enough? Emmis, I think he's a perfect in-between point, because he has traveled, and in that scene that you mentioned, he has a lot of trouble trying not to jump to Alenska and say a few choice words because of his unfounded fear. There is quite a lot of real world in that conversation as well.
Yes, I think many people have encountered older people, sadly often relatives even, where they have problematic political views, and it's knowing how to confront those, or when to say something, or how to go about it. It is a complex issue, and yet it's something that does need to be spoken about, because at the end of the day, we're all immigrants to some extent. I think there are very few people today who haven't moved to some degree. Even my family came from the UK in the past century. I've got relatives who'd come down to South Africa. I've also got relatives who'd come from Zimbabwe to South Africa more recently. And it is difficult sometimes acclimatizing to a new culture. Also just the sense of, speaking for myself, my parents were originally from Zimbabwe. So settling into Cape Town among families that had been here many generations, even though I'm a white South African, there was still a bit of distance, and people were very comfortable because they had settled for many years and they weren't used to being on the move, or, as you mentioned earlier, traveling and being exposed to new ideas. So I suppose it's an issue that's been quite close to my heart, and that's why it came out, and it comes out even more in the far removed later when we start visiting more cosmopolitan clans, places where you have people from many different backgrounds all mingling, as opposed to people who are in a very established area where they've got their set ways of doing things. I decided, just looking at Oculus being as young as he is, we see a lot of the traits in his personality that you will continue to find in Far Removed. Emmis has been very influential on him by then. That, of course, takes place many years later. He's a youngish adult. I think you can choose whether you want to hold on to certain values. I don't think that we have to lose that curiosity and that interest in other people and that fearlessness that we have when we are young. But I think that perhaps there is an inclination as you get older and perhaps more aware of the responsibility of looking after yourself, then sometimes that can invite fear into people's lives. And as you'd also mentioned earlier, if there's quite a limited understanding of the world around you, then sometimes people can attribute all kinds of fears to things that they don't know very well, and to other people and to other foreign concepts. Because Valenska mentions in his discussion with Emmis that immigrants bring different ideas, and then it almost thinks of them as diluting his culture, and he's very proud of his culture. He's happy with their ways of doing things, of thinking. Even though DraSave is innovative in some ways in terms of technology, but when it comes to, I suppose, the way they conduct themselves, the way they dress, their style of architecture, all these things, they don't want to have to accommodate others of doing these things. And so I think there is this tendency in people as they age to start putting a lot of nostalgic value in those kinds of things, not wanting to compromise to any degree. And really, compromise is a good thing. It invites freshness and the kind of changes that maybe could benefit a society.
And also the knowledge, because Emmis in this point, he has already mentored, I think, four or more people. And he makes it very clear in that conversation that some of those students he had, they went on to become professionals and very renowned professionals, and they wouldn't have found their professions if they hadn't traveled. Traveling for them was enriching, but Valenska in that conversation, and even in his attitude afterwards, it really seems that he feels that it will dilute or even destroy one's culture. Like, the part that baffled me is towards the end, when Stacia tells Emmis that he needs to showcase that he will at least, quote unquote, maintain Oculus's culture by showing the others that he will feed him traditional food, that he will dress him traditionally and all of that, because, and it's such a silly thing to expect that you are going to lose your culture simply because you go to live in another country. I think, at least from personal experience, it only strengthened some bonds.
Yes, I'd be interested to hear more of your experiences on this subject because I think you would have a lot to offer. But I do think that we're in a very interconnected world today. We're able to learn so much even without traveling, just about other people. And it's beautiful having that variety and being able to appreciate the strengths of different cultures and to be able to, you know, eat the foods that have been prepared by other people, or even if you may not participate directly in things like religious festivals and that, just being able to kind of observe and participate and lift people up. I think it is wonderful that Emmis is about to introduce Oklas to all of these things. And I could have introduced some of that in the novella as well. Could have started from the point where Emmis has already acquired Oklas as a mentee. I could have had them traveling all over the moon, exposing them to different things. But instead, I chose to focus on the process of the two of them coming together. I also thought it would be a good opportunity to look at this very closed-off clan and really address Saver's one of many clans. There are others that also share the same kind of fear, and you come to meet some of the Naiads from those clans later. But I also wanted it to be a case of, well, to kind of have this balance where Emmis does take heed of what Stasia is asking of him, which is to preserve some of the Oklas's culture, his ways of doing things. And Stasia is another interesting character. She's operating within this very closed-off clan, but at the same time, she is quite open-minded. And as far as I'm concerned, she's someone who would have traveled when she was a bit younger. And so she compromises and she tries to find solutions that will suit all parties involved, because she also is very fond of Emmis. They have quite a long-standing relationship. There's trust there, so she trusts who Emmis is going to introduce Oklas to, the kinds of things that he's going to be exposed to. She also knows his track record and knows that he has benefited the other titlings and juveniles who've encountered him in the past.
And she also understands the fears of the heirs as well. The politicians are in there, and that's why she always tries to negotiate that middle ground. Something that I found very interesting about Stasia is that she never seems to judge one opinion or the other. It's like very difficult to find her own opinion about the whole thing, whether Oklas should immigrate or not. She accepts everyone's point of view and she tries to do what is best for Oklas rather than imposing her own opinion. She has so few scenes, but she was such a complex character. In the few interactions she had with Emmis, her whole worldview came out. It simply popped out of a page.
I enjoy listening to conversations between people, and when I'm writing dialogue, I try to make it flow naturally. I find those two, I'd already mapped out a backstory for both Stasia and Emmis, and some of that comes across in the novelette, and other parts you've come to discover through the course of the story, and some of it is just implied. But Stasia, I find she is a very grounding influence on Emmis. He is someone who is an adventurer and he is quite gregarious. In many ways, he sees some of these qualities in Oklas too. Whereas Stasia, I'd say she is probably a bit more inquisitive than many of the people in her clan. I think she values education. She enjoys seeing that curiosity in the young, and she wants them to find opportunities outside of their home clan. I think she would have also liked that for herself to some extent, but she chose to staying there and educating the tidlings that were found in Drassave. So she's made some sacrifices, I think, but she's also, I'd say that all of it is very intentional. She knows what she's doing. She knows why she's made the choices she has. And the same goes for Emmis. I'd say that at one point, the two of them discuss raising the tidlings and the ability to really bond with them. And perhaps I should actually mention a little bit about Naiad's biology at this point, because I think it's relevant.
Yeah, go ahead.
They don't reproduce in the usual sense. I use pronouns he and she, so they kind of recognize gender, but it's really more to describe their sense of self or identity. And so how do naiads come about? Well, they are harvested from the sea, and this is a dark fantasy story. So there's an element of magic, I suppose, the vine, their creation. I do touch on that in the duology. But sometimes when you're writing fantasy, you introduce people to concepts and you just hope that they will embrace it and go along with that. And it was interesting just looking at how that would impact culture and the way people see things, because they have no control over their own population numbers. However many tidelings, which come as these small sort of coral polyps to the shore, however many wash up, that's the number that they have to work with and to look after. And so it's a very community-based way of raising their young. You wouldn't have parents. Instead, you would have an entire group of first carers and then various educators raising them, and they grow very quickly. So within the first 5 years of their life, they're virtually teenagers, I suppose you could say, and they're ready to, you know, prepare for adulthood. Because Deja is involved in the system of raising and educating groups of youngsters, she doesn't really have a chance to bond with them. And I suppose that adds to some of her impartial nature. She's very good at balancing the needs of many different people. Whereas Emma's is able to get very close to his mentees. He has only, I suppose, two or three at a time on average. In Oklas's case, he's wanting to just focus entirely on the one mentee. So he's able to develop that kind of influence that a parent would have, really, and which is a concept that is foreign to Naiads. It was just interesting having him and Stasia discussing the differences. She actually expresses longing that she would like to have that same closeness in being able to guide a young person's views, introduce them to new things, you know, develop more of a relationship with them.
At some point in that conversation with Emmys, it even feels like she envies him, not deeply, but at least she envies not him, but the connection he's able to form. She implies, at least how I read it, was that she implied that trying not to bond too deeply with the juveniles was safer for her because of her daily job.
Yes. Stasia, I think she's someone who does feel deeply and she does seek connection, and she does, I think it's true of everyone really. I suppose her culture and the way her clan does things, they are a little bit more reserved, more distant. There isn't that closeness. And she does have that. She has, you could almost say, like a long-distance relationship with Emma. So even though there's no pair bonding in that parental sense, and the Naiads do still form romantic relationships, they can experience kinds of intimacy with each other. I thought it was quite sweet between the two of them, what they offer each other. Stasia is someone who Emmys trusts. He bounces ideas off of her. He sees her as a wise person, someone who can give him guidance. And Stasia, she does envy Emmys to some degree, because the clan that he's from, Drasrindar, is perhaps a bit more open to the idea of travel. And as I'd mentioned earlier, I do think she would have traveled a bit in her youth. She ultimately does feel that she owes a lot to her own clan, but she lives vicariously through Emmys in some ways. I imagine the two of them keeping in contact even when he's far away, and her being quite interested in the people he's meeting and what he's doing, the things that he's learned. I think she's quite excited for the opportunities that he does offer the juveniles.
Yeah, she mentioned that a few times that he will give them a knowledge that or an experience that her and the system in which she works can't offer. With that, I want to circle back to what you mentioned of the education. I honestly found that to be mind-blowing. Sometimes in fantasy, we tend to find societies that are more human than they should, you know, that they tend to have a lot of similarities with humanity. And what I really loved here is that by removing the concept of a family, basically raising up the tidelings and the juveniles is a quote-unquote problem for the entire societies. They have this whole structure that also changes how they relate to each other. There was no tribalism at the family level. It's only at the clan level. It's a minor detail, but it completely changes the entire society. Why did you decide to focus on that? What themes you wanted to explore?
Yes, when I started planning Far Removed, I decided one of the lovely things about speculative fiction, you can see it in things like Ursula Le Guin's Hainish Cycle, The Left Hand of Darkness. I was introduced to that book, which also looks at you know, you take a society that's quite human in some ways, but then you can just dismantle it and maybe change one or two key features about it. It's interesting as a thought experiment, just to see how that can completely set that society going in a different direction from anything we're used to. You know, in many ways, even societies today, I feel that parents perhaps as much of a strong influence, that nuclear family of the mother, the father, and the children, that is breaking up a bit today. And there are many other influences, families that look very different from that traditional model. It was just interesting to look at a culture where there really are no families in that natural sense. It actually shaped the clans. It's shaped some of the very rigid views that we were discussing earlier, the concerns about immigration and that, and even the fact that wealthier clans like Dress Save, those that are quite innovative, they put emphasis on measures like they're looking into cloning and that kind of thing, because they need that insurance policy for future generations. They have to rely on the sea to see whether any more naiads are going to be washing up on their shores, and they'll be able to keep everything going in the future. They can't sort of encourage people to have more babies because that's not an option. So to my mind, that added to the social segregation that we see both in far removed, and we get hints of that in Tidelings, because the fear of newer clans largely stems from the sense of, well, our numbers could dwindle and we could be overrun by newer clans that may start having a larger population than us. And so that it introduces a lot of these controlled measures where they're trying to kind of prop themselves up and keep other groups down. But then also just on a psychological level of the way the different clans would operate and understand things. If you haven't had just two parents influencing you, you're raised by an entire community. One of two things could happen. You could either have quite a detached feeling towards the others in your clan. You wouldn't have that kind of anchor of, okay, there's someone who I am loved by, who really I can confide in. That feeling could be spread across an entire group of people, or it could be dulled to an extent. Then there are other clans, and my other protagonist in Far Removed, Prisma, is from a lower middle class clan. She's not as well off as Oklas. I won't spoil too much about where she is in the geology, because she has been through some difficult things, but her clan of origin is a very loving clan. It's a smaller clan. There is, even though there are no parental figures, there's a lot more closeness and intimacy between the harvest mates, which would be siblings, and the carers there. I thought it was just lovely, the idea that in reality, as we experience it, it's a bit like the lottery. You could be born to parents who are very attentive, very loving. Other people find themselves in very broken families, whereas with the naiads, they would all get much the same level of attention growing up in their clan, depending on the way their clan handles things.
That actually opens up to so many possibilities. I also read The Left Hand of Darkness. I also thought that it was an amazing book. And when I read yours, I did have the impression that you were toying with some key factors on the society to change it. Circling back to something that you mentioned regarding the Harvest Mates, which are these groups of kids that are raised together, something that struck me is that I would have expected them, from my very human perspective, to perhaps behave more like siblings. But given the interactions they have, they felt more like classmates rather than siblings, which again ties back to what you mentioned of the lack of, it's not human in this case, naiad connection, and the love and the care that they have. To some degree, I think that also influences how they seek to communicate with other communities, especially the communities that are far away, because if they are so young and they are not allowed to have that type of close connection, either with a parent or a role model figure or with siblings, that of course will affect how they relate to societies, especially as they grow to become, to take on professions like a politician or something.
Yes, especially in Dress Save, they have fairly high numbers of the tidelings that arrive on their shores. And so in the average year, they would have over 30 of them. And it's difficult to create sibling bonds with 30 people going through life at the same pace as you. But even so, I kind of imagine them, as you had mentioned, in that classmate type environment, you would have some that are closer to each other than others. So Oklos, like some of the other misfits in the group, he's drawn to Casimir and Rennick. Those two are Rennick especially is quite a spaced out, strange girl, but I love her. She's odd. And I'm a bit odd too. So it was nice being able to write little hints that some of them had grown a bit closer and had formed something along the lines of friendships or that sibling bond. As with normal families too, though, you will have siblings sometimes that you don't get on with at all. And towards the end, there's a moment where Oklos interacts with another of his Harvest Mates, Bistri. She's very ambitious and she is proud of her Savian heritage. She sees, she's one of those people where from a young age she already knows what she wants to do with her life, hasn't really considered other options, but she has identified a track where she can get very far in life and she's just set on that. It was an interesting contrast with Oklos. They're both young, but he definitely embraces that curiosity towards the world outside as opposed to just trying to achieve a great deal. His interest isn't really in wealth or in status. He does come to accumulate some of these things in his life, but it's not his end goal. So it was fun kind of creating a bit of tension between him and some of the harvest mates that don't see things the way he does.
Yeah, and that also, I think, made it pop up from the page, because even though they all got a somewhat similar education and environment, they are so different, especially Bistri and Oklos. And that also speaks out of the individuality they have, that even when they have this society-wide pre-established way of being educated, you still have the differences. It's not only on the nurture, it's also on the nature side who you end up being.
Yes, I like that. Nature versus nurture is such an interesting concept. With the way I structured Naiad society, it gave me a chance to display some of that, or just to play with those ideas. And because Far Removed is largely dealing with adult characters, it was really fun to use this prequel novelette as an opportunity to just look at the dynamics between all of these characters and just to see how, even if you've all passed through the same system, it could be like on a genetic molecular level that you're already destined to become a certain kind of person. Again, it could also come down to choices that you make in life, who you decide you want to be. And even with the Tidelings, I'd mentioned on a molecular level, I love the idea that they were in constant flux. They were always changing because they're kind of made to camouflage underwater when they're in that very early stage of development. That idea of like their skin tone changing, their facial features changing, everything is kind of a bit unstable in those first few years of their lives before they start settling into themselves. They even refer to the young Tidelings with a new pronoun that I use throughout this series, which is A-E-R, in place of he, she, him, her. It's just the idea that when they first arrive on the shores, there's potential there. They could come to identify as male or andred, female or gynid. They could look anyway, you just don't know. And so there's a lot of room. And I think that's just really, it's almost like making physical the concept that children are bundles of potential, that you actually can't really impose things on them. All sorts of things can shape them over time, whether it's like physically or in terms of their personality and their mind. All of these things are kind of open to changing. And even if they're all raised together, there's still a lot of variation within that group.
And there is also a lot of acceptance. That is something that I particularly like. They had this custom of not assuming anything and using the new pronoun instead of assigning one to a person until that Naiad in particular will present themselves and will say the name and the pronouns and all the details. But it was also so embedded in the society that you could see that when Emys interacted with Oklos in some parts, he was also assessing that behavior as politeness. And it was clear to me that it's part of the society, it's part of the culture, how the titling's changed. I really like that concept at the start, especially when we have a scene. I think Missy is looking at the sea and they see some of them being harvested. And as they are walking, some of them are already changing, but others are waiting. So not everybody changes at the same time. And I think that it's very clear throughout the story that the different titlings or juveniles, they all change at different speeds. And that's also very accepted. At least in this novelette, it didn't seem that the educators will put up specific years in which they will have had to change.
Yes, it was fun just look at this culture, because in many ways, Drassave does seem to be quite rigid in their views towards immigrants, in their understanding of the outside world. But then in other ways, they're quite open-minded. So it's this contrast. And I think you see that in reality too. People surprise you because it's almost as if you build up walls in your mind in certain places. And then in others, you can be very free and accepting. It actually provides you with the opportunity to challenge yourself and say, well, you know, maybe I can deconstruct some of those walls. And looking at this culture, I'd say one of the good things about naiads in Drassave, and I think this is a quality that many of the clans would have just by the nature of their biology, I'd say they're all quite open-minded when it comes to the development of tidlings and who they end up becoming. There may be some concerns, not so much in terms of like how the tidling looks or at what age they've reached certain developmental goals. It would come down more to whether they're going to bring honor to their clan, whether they are going to, especially in Drassave, I'd say, if they do have people leaving the clan, they kind of want them to retain that sense of who they are. They want them to represent them correctly. And so there is that little bit of pressure as well on characters like Oklis who are going to be abroad.
And it also seemed to be some sort of help from the government, I'm not sure what will be the word, to sustain the juveniles after they graduate. And there was a whole concern there. It's very similar to what happens in real world. If Oklis leaves, what happens there? He should give something back to the community that raised him. You know, the similar questions that we have. What I liked in there is, as you mentioned before, the contradiction that it appears to be between how accepting they are of the individual, as long as the individual belongs to Drassave, and if they are from the outside, they are not that respectful, because Emis, I think he's a different color. He seemed to be more rusty brown, reddish or something like that. And they make some comments like he looks like an outsider, or it's very nuanced. It's never very overt in the text, but they were making those comments. In turn, the tidlings will change and everybody will be, that's okay. You know, and it's, as you said, it's that contradiction that makes it feel natural. Because we humans are a mass of contradictions ourselves as well, not only at an individual level, but also at a societal level.
Yes. sorry, I start every answer with yes, because you always say such, you make such good comments. So I can only agree.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Of all of the prejudices that you see in naiads, I'd say it's not so much in terms of their skin colors and that, because there's such a variety of them. Their skin colors are largely influenced by the marine environments that they were found in. So they could be influenced by corals or various seaweeds. Or in the case of Drassave, a lot of them come out with a bluish kind of tone because it's quite a cold environment and quite murky. There's not a lot of color there. And that was just a fun world building concept. But it was kind of fun in that one scene you'd mentioned with the tidlings, and they're curious. So they're going to point out, well, actually, it's the juvenile group, not the tidlings. They're going to point out things like the fact that Emis looks different from them, especially since they're not used to encountering foreigners. Whereas if they had gone to enough clans, they'd see naiads in like every shape and color and form you can imagine.
How it's addressed is very differently, because when the adults, Valenska and all of them, they meet with Emis, their approach is more like, outsider. Instead, the kids, when they actually see him, it's more like, whoa, outsider, you know, with all the curiosity, and the reaction is completely different, even when one can be thought of as mildly offensive because they treat him like you're less because you're from a different clan, while the kids have that innate curiosity we all end up losing.
It was fun, actually, again, just looking at that contrast that you'd mentioned. I'd say the elders in Drasev, they have some respect for Emma simply because he's from another island in the same channel area as them. But certainly that doesn't extend towards clans that are like further away or clans that are like the lower levels, Orta, which would be middle class, or the unclassified clans, which are very new clans. There would be some bias towards them. There's even some bias towards some of the other Premor clans that are of a similar level to them, but very far away, and they don't understand them. It was a good thing, I thought, just to show that children are excited by new things. They're excited by someone who's different, who probably has many stories to tell. They respond to Emma's fairly quickly.
And they also, when they respond, it's again like we can see cliques within the kids. Some of them are very reserved and they are in a group and they just leave. And others are there like trying to catch his attention and popping questions. And it felt very realistic, something that I think almost all of us as adults can remember having done in the past as children, you know, that approach of curiosity. Let's ask questions, even when some of the questions are that coming from there. In the novelette, it's very fast-paced. Emmys rushes it off, but the children, they were asking like very normal, common questions out of sheer curiosity as well. And what I liked from there, again, it ties back to that idea that even if they are all raised together, they are all different. It was perhaps the idea of the closer groups, those cliques, those friends that get to form in there, and how they end up having similar personality traits as well. I really like that because then again, when Emmy interacts with the adults, you can see roughly the same groups, you know, you can see the people that are quieter, the people that come in there and ask questions, people like Valenska, who shows it's very blunt with his opinions and so on. I love that contrast, how they can go from one group to the other, even if at this stage, of course, they are different naiads.
There's a good sense of any classroom, you know, you would have children with the different temperaments. And I wanted to just reflect that. We'd mentioned Bistri a bit earlier, and she tends to mix with other young naiads who are interested in getting somewhere. So there's a bit of competition between them. There's also the sense of, okay, well, if I mix with this group of people, they can take me places. Then there are others, like I'd mentioned, the ones that Oklas tends to befriend. But the thing with Oklas that I wanted to highlight, because it's something that stays with him throughout his life, is the fact that he can straddle the lines of those different cliques in the class or between his harvest mates, even if he doesn't necessarily get along with all of them, especially those like Bistri who see things very differently from him. And this is something he may have in common with Stasia to an extent. He is quite accepting and able to kind of maneuver around the differences and try to find some way to be civil with people, some way to make them all get along to an extent. So he does have his preferred group, the misfits, the ones that are a bit quieter. He enjoys kind of bringing them out of their shells. But then he also does know how to speak to the others. And even it's mentioned a bit later on in the book that he's not particularly talented in any one area like academics or sports, but he's involved in everything and he's eager to support the others. So he'll come and cheer on the sports team of their side, and he likes to identify qualities in people and try to bring those out, which is something Emmys really appreciates because he does the same thing, because Oklas does come to kind of appreciate that process of education. It's something that he then continues in Far Removed as well. And so you can see the seeds of that interest, his interest in people, all coming out.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that comparison you made between Oklas and Stasia. I think it also we can contrast that to the children. When the juveniles approach Emmys, their curiosity feels more of, this is something new, this is something different, I want to ask questions and get that knowledge. While Stasia's and Oklas's curiosity is more of, this is a different person. They have a different background. I want to understand them. And I think that's what makes Oklas such a good negotiator and also somebody who is capable of understanding the others, because I'm not sure if it is intuitive because we don't get to have his POV in this novelette. He always seems to be trying to understand the other, taking cues about the other. And at the same time, just like Stacia, he remains non-judgmental. And that's what fosters that empathy.
I find a lot of people really liked Oklas as a character in Far Removed. And I thought it was interesting to have, you know, a male presenting character who does have that strong sense of empathy and who is interested in like the emotional temperature of a room, because it's not something that you see terribly often. I just thought it's a lovely thing to write. I mean, I put Oklas through some things in Far Removed. He goes through some difficulties, but I think he wins people over rather quickly. And when you're writing a society that has a lot of harshness to it, both in Far Removed and in the Tidelings of Drossafe, there are some rather heavy themes. There's a lot of prejudice. People don't necessarily treat each other well or have a very good perception of one another. I needed someone to kind of act as a vehicle to kind of keep that empathy and that hope and that sense of connection between people, because it could become quite a difficult story to write if it was only focusing on characters who, you know, were wanting to shut people out and not come to sort of challenge their thinking. So even if we feature some of those characters, I needed to follow characters like Emmys and Stasia and then Oklas, who are kind of beacons of light or of that care for others and wanting to create connection rather than like segregate people.
It was a very interesting contrast between his worldviews and the ones from the council, from Valenska and all of them. Something that you mentioned in there is how Oklas being a male presenting character and how he has his empathy. Something that I noticed there, it's also that Emmys also has some feelings that are not generally presented in a male character. There is a whole section in which he reveals to Stasia that he would like to have an heir, which is something that in this society, it's not possible at all, not physically. And apparently it seems that not also legally, that they cannot take heirs. There was a bit in there implied. But I wanted to ask you a bit more about that and what will be the implications of that desire Emmys had.
I think it grows out of what we were discussing a bit earlier, that desire for closeness, for like passing on a bit of yourself, a bit of the way you see things. So even though they don't have those smaller families, even though everything is very kind of community based, there's still a sense of like, I've got something valuable and I want someone else to like carry that on in the future when I'm gone. It's just lovely, the thought that doesn't have to be, you know, a biological relative, that can be that mentor-mentee dynamic that they have, was lovely to look at. There are so many ways that we can actually pass on skills or knowledge or values to younger people, and you don't actually have to be a blood relative to them. Emmys does have that softer side. He enjoys like bonding with people and being able to impart some of those values that he has, as opposed to just, you know, preparing them for life with in a particular profession. It goes beyond that. He wants to shape their experiences. He wants to let them see things a little bit the way he does, but he also wants them to kind of grow past him. And although he's taken apprentices over the years in different fields, and he's sort of prepared them to go in whatever direction they're interested in Oklas's case, there's also a strong sense of he's almost looking for a son figure, someone who, beyond just like preparing him to be a success, he also wants to, he trusts him, he thinks this is someone, if I like left my estate to him, he'd do good things with it. And that becomes quite important, and we see like the fruits of that in Far Removed when Oklas is an adult.
Now I'm even more interested in reading on that. Something that I really liked from Emmys is that he seems to think that the mentees, they don't need to pay him, they need to pay it forward. He's always looking for the people he trained and he educated to do something for society or to go back and continue that work with other people, not with him. And I think that's a trait of a great mentor. At any point, Emmys wanted to create clones of himself. He just wanted to give the others the opportunity to develop. And I think that's also what happens with Oklas, that he's really looking for someone who can continue to pay it forward, you know, continue to, at least that's how I read it. And I felt that it tied in very nicely with his feelings of wanting to have that son figure that you mentioned, especially because he seems to be older and he seems to also think that his time is running out, so he better prepare somebody to continue the work that he was doing.
At this point, Emmys is like middle-aged, as naiads go. He's in that place where he is thinking about what kind of legacy he wants to leave. He's wanting to do something a little different than what he's done in the past with the other mentees. I liked what you said about paying it forward. I think that's such an important thing when you're writing privileged characters. Emmys and Oklas are the people who check their privilege. There's nothing wrong with having like an abundance of money. Emmys has done well for himself as an entrepreneur. He's very well connected, but he doesn't want to just like store that all for himself. And maybe that's what makes him different from some of the other Premor clans and people like Valenska, who there's almost the sense of scarcity of, oh, you know, everyone on the outside is lacking and we've got an abundance, but now they're going to come and take from us. So we must just hold on very tightly and keep everyone out. Emmys chooses to look at things through it in a different way. He just sees opportunity. I think it's very true that when you don't have a closed fist, you know, you open your hands, then interestingly, good things do often come your way. Then you're able to share it. And it just seems to have like this accumulative effect rather than the sense of people taking and things sort of being dispersed and running away from you. You know, people are drawn to Emmys, they're drawn to Oklas. It's lovely just to see that these kinds of characters, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with them being privileged, but they know how to use it in a way that is for the betterment of many people beyond them.
Perhaps that also ties up to how well-traveled Emmys is, because he probably saw a lot. And there are a few comments in there that imply that he saw quite a lot of things, hardship and everything else in himself and in others. And I think that also changes your perspective of what you have or what you don't have. If you have been through hardship, it's far easier to, during a moment of wealth, to actually value what you have because of what you have been. And in this case, his travels and everything he has done has also affected how he sees his own wealth and what he can do for others. Instead of keeping it for himself, he just wants to give. I'm just thinking that there is a connection there, perhaps between what he has seen and how he acts.
I actually found when I was writing parts of Far Removed, it doesn't take us all across the moon where you can actually see the different clans, but it's a more, I'd mentioned earlier, it's a cosmopolitan area. And so you do have quite a variety of people from different backgrounds, and you get that sense of this bigger world and the kinds of things that the different clans go through. Although you don't really get a sense of that in the novelette because it's very focused just on the clan in which it takes place. But I did think to myself when I was writing Emmys, you know, he would have maybe not experienced hardship himself, but some of his empathy would have grown from encountering clans that had less or clans that had been taken advantage of. So when he does choose to mentor Oklas, he wants to take him to see some of these things too. And Oklas is also shaped by some of the experiences he has. The fruits of that also come up in Far Removed. I don't think this is a big spoiler because it's something that's established in the very first chapter of Far Removed, but Oklas has founded a college and it's specifically aimed at helping naiads who are from some of these poorer clans. And there's that sense of him wanting to share some of what he has.
Yeah, and he mentions that as well a few times, that he has accumulated so much that he doesn't want it to go anywhere but to another person, someone who could actually continue what he's doing. And what I liked from that relationship is that he comes in very set on what he wants, on the person he wants and the characteristics. And he's not really looking, you know, for technical expertise or intelligence. It's like from the start, he's looking at that empathy that Oklas seems to have.
Oklas is an intelligent, capable character, but actually when I was writing him, I decided that really his defining quality should be that sense of empathy towards others, because you can have someone who is brilliant, but they're just going to kind of focus on their area of interest on their profession. You just need to look at our world to see that people who can become wildly successful or who are extremely competent in an area, they're not necessarily the best people. Oklas, he does have, like the rest of his clan, he's got a talent for the sciences. He's inquisitive. He does want to keep learning. He got that sense of, like, whatever he experiences, he wants to share that with others. He wants to bring out the best in others. And even though he's young, and you know, in many teenagers, I suppose it's quite normal to be a little bit selfish or focus just on your own future, but he kind of wants to bring others along for the ride, and he likes to identify qualities in other people. He sees something that they can offer, and it's almost like Oklas has this bird's eye view where he's kind of looking at the bigger picture, and he kind of wants to bring the best people on board and see how he can kind of encourage them to be better. They all contribute to this vision that he has. That comes across a little bit more strongly in Far Removed, but already in Tidelings, I wanted it to come across that he can identify the strengths in his harvest mates. There's no jealousy there, or I wish that was me. Instead, he likes to say, okay, well, this person's good in this area, that person's good in another, then you bring them all together into a team, and then we can accomplish things together. I think that's a lovely trait that he has, and Emmas shares that with him.
It's that idea of we rise by lifting others. And I think they both have that, and that Emmas was looking for that, not for anything else, especially because he was looking for that hair, some sort. I think that Oklas takes a lot from Stacia in that regard, because she also seems to have that view of trying to identify what everyone is good on and trying to improve on that.
I like it when people draw a comparison between Oklas and Stacia. Like, the comparison between him and Emmas is perhaps a little bit more obvious, in that there's that desire for travel and that more adventurous spirit, whereas Stacia is a little quieter, more reserved. But the two of them, she and Oklas, definitely they have that diplomatic ability to kind of balance the interests of different parties and try to find something in common that they can kind of bring people together on, or even subtly move people, because I think Stacia also does have a slightly, like, a naughty streak where she does like to kind of subvert the status quo. She likes to kind of invite people like Emmas in, and she likes to kind of enable people like him and Oklas to kind of just change things a little bit, but not in noticeable ways where it's going to kind of cause trouble. In that way, I suppose she's a little bit subtler than Oklas or Emmas, but I do like seeing her do that. It's funny, because sometimes I think people, you know, you have your major antagonists in fantasy stories. You'll have dictators, you'll have very, like, obviously evil people. And Valenska's a minor antagonist. He's not necessarily the worst of people, but certainly you can see some very problematic views that he brings across. In this story, he does present obstacles. Sometimes the views that he shares are sadly, like, they're the kinds of things that feel kind of real. Like, you could actually hear someone saying that, or read something on social media that kind of reflects, you know, his prejudices and his lack of interest in being challenged on certain things. It could be partially because of his position. I've mentioned in the story that Valenska, along with a few of the others, they are part of the heir presumptives, which means that they're kind of like the custodians of the culture in their clan. You know, they'd be like the nobility of their clan, and because you can't really have nobility through blood relatives, instead it's almost like a random selection. Well, each clan has their own process of selecting their nobility, but Valenska happens to be part of the group exceptionally. I guess it would be a bit like many European royals today. They're not really influencing, like, the governance of their countries. There are politicians handling that, but they're kind of, they represent certain traditions and things. That's the role that Valenska and a few of the others like him play within his clan. He is eager to kind of take over from the current peer of Drassave. I haven't put that explicitly in the text, but it's kind of implied that he's got his eye on that role, since the current peer is getting older and she's looking to kind of hand it over. And then the governors would vote on which of the heir presumptives would be taking over next. It was good to kind of introduce him and his views, because I wanted to imply that he likely will get that role. And then Oculus makes some comments about Pierre Save in Far Removed many years later. And you can kind of think, okay, that's probably Valenska he's talking about, just based on the sort of decisions this person's making. But I like dropping little Easter eggs like that and keeping it kind of subtle, where not everyone's going to pick up on the little connections between this novelette and Far Removed. But if you're paying attention, you may be able to kind of fill in some of those gaps.
That's something that I actually loved when I read the novella, how the subtle clues that you put up about the world building. And what I liked from Valenska, granted he's a despicable character, still what I loved from him is how through his conversation, we got a glimpse of the geopolitics and the entire dynamics of the societies. And I think what makes him quite a quiet but terrifying antagonist is that we can find people like him in real life. We can find people who don't want to let a society change and they have power to stop that. It's something, again, that's not often commonly found in fantasy or in sci-fi. And I thought it tied very well with all the concepts related to prejudices from one society to another, and with the naiads and how they are as a society as well.
A lot of high fantasy stories will feature tyrants who are kind of bent on conquest of, you know, expanding and taking over other areas. And certainly there are some societies or some clans within Nyadria who have done that. But some of the antagonists that I present, whether it's Valenska or whether it's the Arudian Pentarchy, who appear in Far Removed, and they're virtually like the worldwide council. They're even a higher authority than what you would get in different regions. But there's like actually something very oppressive about leaders who are just, you know, resisting change at all costs, or who are just kind of like locking things down. So it's not necessarily a very violent or expansive kind of rule, but it's still, it's limiting people, and it's, yeah, it creates quite an oppressive feeling. That's the word that keeps coming up, that sense of not being able to move forward. And it's not necessarily what is best for a society. It's certainly not what is best for individuals, and maybe they can't see it, but they're actually hurting themselves in the process. It creates tension and unrest that like slowly bubbles up. So it's been interesting exploring some of that in the duology.
I personally felt it on Tidelings. It's not overt, it's not very explicit. It's looming, and that's the threat, you know, knowing there is a prequel and that you have this thing building up in the back. And I was reading and asking myself, when is this going to blow up? I think that's also the threat of it. You know, you never know when that change will just bubble up and happen, because it has been stalled for so much time.
Because there's this lack of interconnectivity between clans and lack of communication, really, that actually makes it all the more intense, that sense of something, these bad things in society, these problems that are not being addressed, can lead to all kinds of like extremist behavior. Although I focus on some rebel groups that come up over the course of the duology. They all have different approaches, but there is one group that is presented as largely good people who are looking to kind of restore some balance, who are looking to open lines of communication. And so I don't want to spoil anything more of that, but it is something that comes up. It's on the blurb of Far Removed. You don't get a sense of the opposition within Tidelings, but you do see that there's like this void that is being left, and something needs to kind of fill that.
I honestly, when I read it, I'm not sure if you read the Ada Palmer prologue, that one that I mentioned, the world building that is like dropping clues so that you can see that the world is 100,000 puzzle pieces. When I read your novella, I thought, this is it. And honestly, it was both an enjoyable experience as a reader, but also a learning opportunity. So I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. That means so much. I love reading books in, within the speculative fiction umbrella, just the way they introduce you to so many new concepts, but when it's done subtly and when you can just drop little hints through conversation or through context, Tidelings was a wonderful opportunity to look at culture and geopolitics, as you mentioned, because everything within the story, yes, it's about a mentor looking for a mentee, but that whole process introduces us to a particular clan, and it looks at some of their festivals, it looks at the structure of their society, the way they raise their young, the sort of views held by the people in power within that area. And all of these things just come through mostly through conversation, but also just since Emmas is an outsider, it makes sense that he's sort of observing, and that inwardly he's sort of remarking on things within his POV. That was good, because if it had been from Oklas's point of view, there would be no need for him to sort of make comments on the way they do things on Dress Save, because that's just how it is. It's normal for him. So it would seem a bit out of character for him to suddenly pay attention to the way things are run, or the way his dormitory is arranged, or the festivals and things that he's participating in. These are all routines to him. Just the fact that Emmas, although he's familiar with it all, he's not there all the time. And so he was able to bring a slight outsider's perspective, and then that acted as a bridge to introduce the reader to the society. And Emmas is also kind of inwardly checking, you know, what is normal to him. And then he compares Dress Save's way of doing things to what he's grown used to. And yeah, it was good to just make those little comparisons and contrasts, and allows us to kind of do the same as we're reading.
At the same time, he gave so many layers into the world, you know, because you have what he's seeing, what he's thinking, the comparisons he's drawing, and the ones that we as readers are also drawing between the Naiads are not really like humans. Oh, they have this little thing different. Oh, they don't have families. Oh, they have this. And it was truly a discovery journey. And I loved it. Yeah.
Thank you. It just makes my day when a reader appreciates like the world, because although I'm always trying to develop my writing craft, I really love the world building aspect. And if I can introduce people to that world in a way that is compelling, then, you know, that's all I can ask for.
So on that note, thank you so much, Ko. It has been an incredible discussion.
Thank you for having me, Olivia.
And before we go, will you tell us where the listeners can find you?
Yes, you can find me. I'll give my website first, which is cblansdale.com. And I have a monthly blog there where I will occasionally post just writing updates or observations I have, things that I've learned while writing. Otherwise, you can find me on my socials, Twitter and Instagram at the cblansdale. That is my handle. I'm also on TikTok, but I very rarely use that. Blue Sky is another option. Yes, so looking forward to hearing from anyone who would like to discuss world building or share some of their own views.
Yep, and remember that her book, Far Removed, can be found on Amazon, and you will find all her links, her socials, and the links to her books on the episode's description. Likewise, if you like the episode, please like and subscribe, and let's continue the discussion in the comments. If you want bite-sized discussions, prose analysis delivered right into your email, sign up for my newsletter at liviajelliot.com. You will also receive the ebook for my novella, The Genesis of Change, for free. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.